This morning, I'd like to ask you a question. What defines you? Is it your family, your spouse, your job, your coworkers? So what defines you? Is it something outside? It can be outside, it can be inside. What defines us from the inside is often called our karma. It could be something we've accepted from the outside, an attitude that our siblings, our parents, our aunts, our uncles, whoever we happen to spend our childhood with, defines who we are. A friend of mine and I were talking about retirement and the difficulty people have in retiring. A Russian flooring contractor, he's an immigrant, he's been here for 40 some years, he's about to retire. So he says, yes, he's ready for retirement. He's, you know, saved some money and he's okay, but he has no idea what he's going to do with himself. Because what defined him was, admittedly, he said, my work. Now I don't have that. What do I have? I will suggest that the Buddha, in teaching about suffering, says, in so many words, that what defines you binds you. And nothing that defines you has any permanence. It's empty. So I will also suggest that what you are can't be defined, can't be labeled. You could have some trauma in your life. The trauma could be retirement. Here we are. Oh my God, now what? It could be discovering that you have cancer. It could be some trauma that you carried with you that you don't even recognize anymore. That it's just the dust or the affliction that is your karma that keeps creating the same circumstances for you over and over again because you're identified. So what defines you? It's a wonderful question. If you can answer that, it's a mistake. But what defines you? Let it go. Let it go. Be free in the moment to do what needs to be done without letting it define you. That's called being in the moment. Once you're defined, you're no longer in the moment. Now it's a head trip, it's a head game. So what defines you? Leave it as an open-ended question. It's like asking the question, what is this? What is this? What defines me? What in this moment am I experiencing that defines me? Belief in myself that I'm not good enough. So am I, or whoever I happen to be engaged with, triggers that by saying something like, well, that's not the right way to do it. Well, excuse me, but that's my way of doing it. Thank you very much. Is one answer. Or it could be, yeah, you're right. I did it wrong once again. I'm always doing it wrong. Poor me. I'm not suggesting you get egotistical. Don't get me wrong. That's a whole different thing. That's also just compensating for some insecurity. I'm talking about knowing what needs to be done in this moment means letting go of any sort of idea of what's happening, putting labels on it, assuming that something is a certain way. Ask the question, what am I identifying with? What right now defines me? And do I accept that as who I am? I think from the point of view of being awakened, it's not like all of a sudden you're awakened and you're no longer confronted with something put on you, such as something that defines you. I mean, every sangha that has some teacher, some Zen master, has had some sort of struggle with that whole issue, because there's some defining that goes on. The teacher becomes something for you. She, he, now he's sure to disappoint, to somehow screw up your idea of who they are in any moment. Likewise, you don't presume that you know a student. When you sit down with your teacher and you have a private meeting and you discuss your whatever your needs are in terms of your practice, there is no judgment. He can't. If he does, he's not your teacher. It's just reflecting clear like a mirror, like we've talked about many times. What does it mean to be clear like a mirror and just reflect? No dust on the mirror. Nothing to wipe off. Nothing to clean up. It's just clear like space. So then there's nothing to change. No place to go. No temple to visit. No Himalayas to climb. Just be real. If you're identifying with something in the moment, just recognize it. Poof, it's like a cloud. It no longer has a hold on you because you see its transitory nature and your identification with it, you can recognize it. That's called wisdom. It's not so complicated what we do. It's just that we keep getting in our own way by identifying and being bound by what defines us. Of course, we live in a society that's all about that. It's all the algorithms out there are all about identifying and defining who you are and manipulating you into believing that so that you become this big worm, this big mouth that just kind of like gobbles things up. You might as well be a worm. Or are you going to be free and liberated and wise and a master of your own life? How is it going to work? So I'm not saying it's not a struggle, you know, it's okay. You know, sometimes. How many times a minute do I identify with something? About 100,000. But you see, the difference is you're aware of the game. Not being aware of the game, you're just sheep. You're just part of the problem. You just keep creating the same samsara circle over and over and over again. when I hear some major tragedy where someone does some horrible thing, I always, my heart always goes out to them. It's the weirdest thing, right? You would think I would be angry and hateful and what a despicable human being. But I see what binds them. It's never so simple as just someone is evil. Just saying there's good and evil is a scapegoat. It's avoiding reality. It's not wanting to look at the mind and how it works. It's not duality. There's only mind.
I read about that shooting at that supermarket last night, and there was that, it was so horrific, but then I was just kind of thinking about the kid who did it. And I just go like, why? Just kind of such a strange way of thinking. And it just shattered all these people's lives and his own life and his life of that didn't has yet to happen. It's so crazy, just.
What was he identifying with, right?
He had a narrative in his head.
He had the narrative, all right, yeah. So when we look at our social setting, you know, not to get too involved in politics right now or anything like that, but just to say, you know, to be aware that all these influences are at play. And it's kind of a self-perpetuating scenario. You have this basic misunderstanding about how things are that keeps making this samsara circle keep going. So murder and mayhem is part of this circle. It continues. It always has been there. It will probably always be there on this planet. Why? Because they're not awake. They buy into this thing we're describing right now. There was a young woman I learned about the other day that went to the hospital to ask for help because she was lashing out violently and threatening people, and her family and her boyfriend and everybody was rejecting her and pushing her away. The hospital was kind of like saying, well, you know, we can't do anything about you. You need to go to Centerstone or one of these places where they can lock you up for 3 days. And then right after I heard that whole horrific story, and I could see the whole pattern evolving into real tragedy for everybody because of this, nobody really stepping up to dealing with what's really going on there. And then I see an article almost immediately about those two kids, 14 and 13, that shot up the home, group home out in, I think it was near Miami somewhere, and shot one policeman, and they took the guns from the home. So, you know, and they just went crazy. And so, and when you read about these kids and all the red flags that were there all along and the kind of home that they were in and the fact that the home had an AK-47 and a bunch of guns in a group home for children, you know, you look at the whole picture and it begins to evolve into something totally different than a couple of crazy kids who misacted. Then you look at it a little bit deeper and you see Florida has the worst record in the country for mental illness and support networks for mental illness. There's nothing there. What do we do with them? I mean, really, there's all this stuff around, you know, we go around and we label and then present things in this narrow sort of view that this is what's happening, that fits into our idea of ourselves based on this narrative or this identification with what defines us. So whether we're strongly affiliated with some political organization or group or some crazy right-wing group or some left commie group, or whatever you want to call it, it doesn't matter. That identification is all wrong. It's a mistake, and it leads to more suffering over and over and over again. It's so obvious to me. Every one of these scenarios where these violent, horrible tragedies happen, you could see it coming. You can see it coming years in advance. But nobody's looking and nobody wants to look. Everybody's busy doing their own identification with their own ideas of what life is. So what does a bodhisattva do? When I say when people are suffering, a bodhisattva suffers. You ain't no bodhisattva when you're ignoring what's happening. Really. Let the suffering in. Be part of it. Then recognize what the cause is. Then you can do something about it. If Buddha didn't recognize the cause of suffering, he wouldn't be able to tell you how to solve it. So as long as we keep pushing it away as though it doesn't exist in, or we don't want it to exist, or we don't know what to do with it, or how do we fix it? You know, it all is mind. It all starts right here, heart, mind. So in our own lives, we should do everything we can to be awake and at least contribute on whatever small level we can to making the world a better place by not jumping on the bandwagon of identification with this and that. What is suchness? It's understanding we're all in this together. There's no separation. So all these things that we acknowledge in our practice and that we keep practicing about, all these different ways that we try to approach our understanding of our own lives and the world, it can work for us. There's going to be continue to be tragedy as long as there's ignorance, defilement, anger, greed, ignorance. We have it. But every one of these cases, these young children, I mean, to me, an 18-year-old is a child. Sorry. I know they're being treated as adults, but to me, they're still a child. Buying into things is just part of what they do. I was really disappointed the other day when I heard about this young girl, because I could see in the future something really violent happening, something terrible happening, because she didn't get the help she needed. You know, and the family was screwed up, of course, because it's never just the person in the family. You know, if you've got somebody acting out in your family, you better take a look at yourself too, because you're part of it. It's a group thing. It's not just one person. It's where the work is, right here, right now, right where we are. And you do it. And you don't identify with it. Then you're a bodhisattva. Then you're just doing it, taking care of life. So I'm sorry for those people. My compassion goes out to them. It really hurts every time it happens. It really hurts. But there are patterns, and you can see them. And you can see the denials, and you can see where people are pushing things away, responsibilities. Yeah. It's the world we live in. Let's keep sitting. Let's keep getting together. Let's keep doing what we can to make it a better place in our own little ways. And there are others like us, believe me, doing the same thing. And we can help each other. If we see we're kind of running aground somewhere, we can, you know, thoughtfully help each other out. So As I've said before, I think asking questions and having dialogue in these sessions is really important. I talked a lot today again, sorry, but you know, your questions and your comments are really important. And it helps us to understand ourselves by putting it out there, you know, what our thoughts are, what our feelings are, how we're feeling about something. All of that is a way of getting clear. So if we don't express ourselves, we just stay kind of in the clouds of our own mind. So expressing ourselves and being in community is another way to get clear. So what do you think?
It's an idea that transcends quite a few different faiths, cultures. John Donne, no man is an island, the tower of himself. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Every man's death diminishes. It's there. This is something that people have thought long away.
Yes.
Still we have it. Still we have this issue.
Yes.
People can't see it.
It's an interesting subject, but to find us. Really interesting. I never thought about this to any great depth. But I remember when my daughter was in high school, she came to us and said she wanted a Mac, only a Mac, it's a computer. I said, Marcia, those are $1,500. I can buy a nice one for you for $4,000 or $5,000. Oh, I must have the Mac. You know, and that logo is that I had many friends that their logo is the pine nut, which is very, you're right, it's a suffering, it causes suffering. It's an interesting subject.
Pardon? The radio show this morning was talking about botany and the lack of knowledge in young children today, and that they can name hundreds of corporate logos, but they can't name 10 plants.
Probably true.
Yeah, they can identify and name them, but they can't, the logos, of course, but 10 plants, no.
And what it means, I think it's interesting when you look at people's cars and they have bumper stickers, and the bumper stickers are brands. I just think it's fascinating that, what does that mean? So it's like, all right, so I have this thing, and I like it, I put it on my car. So now when you put that symbol in your car, that is a, for some reason, we've gotten tied in, but that represents a certain ideal I have of myself. I'm a Mac person. Mm-hmm. It's these little things that it becomes this broader thing. And then somebody driving down the road will see somebody with a, like that Mac sticker, will be like, oh, I know what this asshole is.
Right.
Yeah. And then they have an idea, their idea of that. Right. But that because of what their own identity.
I think also as a mother and as a school teacher, the way we start defining children from the time they're this big and what it causes is incredible. Mm-hmm. And I remember learning when I was learning to teach, the one thing they taught was always treat each child according to who they are. But that is not what I experienced as a teacher. And as a parent too, we do that.
Yeah.
You're successful if you do this, if you go to that school, if you get this grade, mm-hmm. if you wear this. Mm-hmm. Who your friends are. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we could do the opposite too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's when you ask someone or someone in your life that inspired you to become who you are today. And often it's a teacher, right? But it's always about acknowledging who they really are. It's always about allowing them to blossom the way they blossom rather than putting it on them. You know, you don't judge and you allow for someone to be who they are with a clear mind like space. See the freedom that offers them? Because how often in our society does that really happen? Somebody's always judging. And like you said, with the labels or, you know, how you dressed or what you look like, what color you are. I mean, all of that. So take all that away and you just treat another being as being part of what you already are, part of all this, suchness. That's much more than you realize. That's a gift that just keeps on giving. Thank you. Well, thank you, everybody. Have a good day.
Thank you for a great subject.
Yeah.
Interesting subject.
You're welcome. Good.
And what it causes.